Hi, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez, and this is Direct Impact, and this is what we're going to be talking about today.
One new poll suggests Vice President Kamala Harris isn't performing much better.
See, I'm not sure I saw that coming. I think that's fascinating. So what actually are the vice president's approval numbers? They aren't good. I'm going to show them to you. I'm Rick Sanchez. Let's do this thing. Okay, here we go once again. It's a topic that's been in the news a lot lately. Mr. Biden, President of the United States, look, he's got an image problem right now. And the problem is what people are seeing on video with their own eyes. The White House says, I and the rest of us in the media who show you these images are distorting reality, that these are fake pictures is what essentially the White House spokesperson said just the other day. Are we really? So once again, there is a video that is being shared all over the country, really all over the world, which is very damaging to the president. And it's sad, right? I haven't shown you this video because I just felt uncomfortable. I almost feel like I'm picking on an older person, you know, like one of my parents or grandparents. But now this has become more newsworthy because, well, there's a new report out about the VP, Kamala Harris. So first, let's look at the video. Here it is. Now, you can see everybody there is singing, and everybody's, you know, wide awake, and everybody's excited, and he's just, like, standing there, stiff as a board. No movement whatsoever, and people have looked at that and said, wow. And now look at the vice president. She's dancing, she's getting her groove on. She actually looks like she's got a lot of rhythm, and she's a pretty good dancer, right? So, all right, that's the picture. I mean, look, it is what it is. You were watching it, right? You saw two things there. You saw Kamala Harris, who appears to be, you know, at least compared to the president, showing a lot of vigor. And, you know, she's someone who is moving a lot. But unfortunately, and here's where the rubber kind of meets the road on this story, her poll numbers are not that much better than the guy who doesn't move so well. Watch this.
As concerns over President Biden's age continue to hang over his re-election campaign, one new poll suggests Vice President Kamala Harris isn't performing much better. A Politico Morning Consult survey found 52% of those asked viewed Vice President Harris unfavorably. Now, of course, these rocky numbers can't and won't keep Harris off the campaign trail. Politicians tend to soldier through such things.
Soldier through such things. It's an interesting way. Only CBS News, which basically works for the State Department, would present this story the way they do. And then if you were to watch the entire thing, you'd see that they're rather apologetic in their presentation of the story. But here's the bottom line, and they can't deny it. Nobody else can. Only 42% of Americans approve of her performance. This is according to Politico and Morning Consult. These are legitimate polls. That's horrible. I mean, that's horrible. I mean, and I don't get it. Is she being dragged down by maybe Mr. Biden's health problems? Is it her performance? What do you think, Manila? What is it? Because these are really bad numbers for a VP. VP usually, they don't usually matter enough to get either really good or really bad numbers. But these are really bad numbers.
Well, Rick, here's the uncomfortable thing, right? Has America or the world yet thought that if Joe Biden wins another term, if he were to die in office, I know that's a cringy thing to say, but if he dies in office in the second term, that means we get a President Kamala Harris. And these polls further go to debunk this whole ageism thing that, oh, America is hating on an old person. That's not the case because Kamala Harris is young and vibrant. She's even a good-looking lady.
Yeah.
Still don't like her. Nobody, and I mean nobody, wants Kamala Harris. And I can tell you, as a California native, she was a very unpopular AG, making so much good use of the old three strikes law that was established in 1994. And when she was running against Biden in the 2020 primary,
she destroyed him.
She couldn't win.
Yeah.
She couldn't win our own home state in California because according to polls, She dropped out 3 months prior to avoid humiliation after Tulsi Gabbard ate her lunch at those debates. Democrats just have nobody else, Rick.
Do you know what I think when I see her, especially since she's been VP? Prior to that, I barely knew who she was. I see someone who is surprised that they're the Vice President of the United States. I do. I'm sorry, but somebody who looks in the mirror every morning and goes, "Oh my God, I'm the Vice President." And she goes around.
How did I get here?
Exactly. Maybe this is too mean, but I mean, her persona doesn't fit the role. She doesn't look like she has any of that gravitas. And I don't want her to be Dick Cheney, trust me. But there's something, and the way she's always laughing, everything is a joke, and she's got glad. She looks like she's
very uncomfortable.
Yeah, I don't know what it is.
She's uncomfortable.
And I think whatever I'm feeling, because I'm just an average idiot, right? I think the rest of America looks at that and says, yeah, there's something there that just doesn't add up with her. So anyway, here's something else. This is important. Russian President Putin must have been watching my show yesterday. I doubt it, by the way. But regardless, he's kind of saying the same thing that I mentioned yesterday when I said that it's amazing that people who live in Western countries know so little about this guy. Good or bad, few, if any, know his actual points of view. Few ever hear him speak. I mean, watch this news conference, or watch his news conferences, I should say. And that's just not smart. Mr. Putin, he's now in Vietnam. He's continuing his "Here I Am, Ask Me Whatever You Want" tour. And he talked about this very thing yesterday, coincidentally. Here it is.
Связанным с интернетом и свободным доступом к любой информации. Ограничить доступ к огромному потоку информации невозможно. Поэтому есть только один способ преодолеть негативные тенденции, с этим связанные, а именно быть более убедительными на информационном поле.
He's saying Russia, and he in particular, I think, has an information problem. Not that, I think what he's saying is, how do we get this message out? How do we get people to pay attention to at least our point of view, even if they disagree?
Well, I mean, look, Rick, the Tucker interview was really the first major exposure Putin got to a Western audience. For years, Western media had maligned him as some sort of like a Dr. Evil character and had in effect banned him from their airwaves. And as was any Russian-related media, right? Just as those tensions with Ukraine ramped up ahead of the SMO back in February.
And by the way,
they
did that with the Tucker interview too. As soon as the interview was over, every Western news media said, "Oh my God, can you believe
exactly.
he said?" They destroyed Tucker and Putin after that without even listening to
it.
Right.
That's my point. Putin's messaging problem is not that of his own creation. It's the American stranglehold on Hollywood and on media. And furthermore, Rick, the Putin style, what we saw on that Tucker interview, Vladimir Putin is very nuanced and very detailed.
Yes.
In the West, we would call that long-winded, but Western audiences view the world in 15-second TikTok clips and sound bites. That's our culture. And as a result, our political discourse has also been reduced to this. I'm not saying I agree with it, but that's kind of what it is. So if the Russians or the Chinese or North Korea wish to be more impactful in reaching Western audiences, they'll need to get more adept at what appeals to those cultures. And it's these quick, snappy little sound bites, unfortunately.
Yeah, I could just see Putin doing a TikTok video every day.
I mean, that's where we're at.
No, I know. You're making the point to make a point. I don't think that's what you're suggesting, but it actually is true, sadly enough, that the fact that the guy does a one hour and a half long interview details the history of Russia, and then people say, "Oh, that was boring." It's like, what do you want? All right, here's a shocker. You ready? Or maybe just a fake announcement. I can't tell at this point. But a Ukrainian ambassador, a woman named Katerina Zelenko, she has come out on the record and said something that I didn't expect. She says Ukraine would be willing to attend a peace summit sponsored by China, where Ukrainian officials would be face-to-face with Russian officials to negotiate a peace deal. Here's the statement. I'm going to read it to you. It goes like this. Ukraine would consider participating in a Beijing-led peace summit with both warring sides present, so long as the talks are based on the rules and the principles enshrined in the UN Charter and international law. Manila, are they bluffing?
Well, look, Rick, there are mixed signals coming from Kiev on these proposed China talks. First, this is not a China-only proposal. Let's get that clear. This is co-sponsored by Brazil, and they pitched that idea back in early May ahead of Zelensky's flop of a summit in Switzerland. It is a six-point plan that has been endorsed by 100 countries, primarily in the global south. Its backers say it's a path to ending hostilities. Its critics say China is doing Russia's bidding. Now, State Department spokesman Matt Miller is spinning all of this and saying China is just trying to undermine Kiev and steal the stage as being the new power broker. So while you have the ambassador calling China a friend of Ukraine, you have this so-called president of Ukraine who has, I would say, usurped power for the last month, saying he's going to follow the lead of his financiers, namely the U.S. and U.K. So the question is whether or not the interest in attending these new round of talks is sincere. I can't answer that. I don't know the ambassador. I can't get into her head. But my read is that she's expressing what the parliament of Ukraine wants, those who are still in their official capacity, and saying what Zelensky can't say.
Yeah, and I think it may have something to do with the unmitigated disaster, as you mentioned, that was that Swiss summit where they invited 160, only 90 showed up. Of those 90, 80 of them signed the accord. Two have now backed out. China wasn't invited. Russia wasn't invited. I mean,
so China was invited. They dissed him.
They said, if you're not going to have Russia here, what the hell are you doing, right?
And I mean, wasting our time.
Which is kind of a legitimate question. We're going to have a fight between two great boxers, but only one of them is going to show up. Who wants to go? I mean, what? It is interesting that this is being presented now. We'll follow it. We'll see if it's legitimate, and we'll see what happens. As usual, have a great weekend, partner. I appreciate you sharing
you
your thoughts. Take care. All right, I'm going to join a guest here real quick, and I'm going to be talking to him. Now, he's got a different explanation than I do regarding why Mr. Putin has visited and signed a pact with North Korea. Podcaster and journalist Tariq Cyril will be joining us here. In fact, there he is. We're going to be having a conversation in just a little bit. And I look forward to it because this is one really smart guy who writes some pretty interesting stuff. We will be right back. Hey, welcome back. I'm Rick Sanchez. And joining us now is Tariq Cyril Amar. He is a podcaster and a journalist who writes with a very fresh perspective about global affairs. You can read his material on The Ninth Wave. That's who he, what he writes as in Substack. I am a subscriber, so I've had a chance to read some of his writings, and I think it's kind of fascinating. Let me start with what I mentioned as we were going to break. I was reading with interest your article about why Mr. Putin went to North Korea. I have been sharing my opinion that he went to North Korea because he's simply messaging. Same reason he sent ships into Havana, same reason he's doing military exercises off of the Caribbean. He's basically telling the world, look, I too have muscles, and I'm going to show them to you. You're saying it's something else. It's about satellite communications with North Korea. Explain.
My main argument is that there are many reasons why he went, and I think I actually agree with you. One reason is obviously what everybody has been pointing out in the West, and the Russians have summarizing what we have been talking about in their own media, which is that this is a gesture towards the West in general, in particular to the West in the Asia-Pacific region. It's a gesture towards not only the United States, it's a gesture towards South Korea, Japan, maybe to an extent to Australia. All of these things are in play here, but I think what has been overlooked is something else, again, which is that my sense is that it's in particular also aiming at South Korea, because South Korea in recent years has really ramped up its arms exports. South Korea has a very serious military-industrial complex, partly because of its own geopolitical situation on this, you know, fault line with North Korea. It has a very substantial arms industry, and since the 90s, it has made an effort to make it technologically cutting edge. And they have basically, it seems, succeeded. Their material is untested, but they can build fourth generation fighter jets, they can build network-centric tanks, and so on and so on. And there are two things about South Korea that I think are extremely important for Russia. One is that South Korea has unofficially, but it's very likely that they've already supplied military supplies to Ukraine. And of course, Russia is fighting Ukraine right now. But the other thing that is often overlooked is that Poland is ramping up its military massively. Poland is planning in a relatively short time to double the size, actually more than double the size of its land forces. And it is also kitting them out with advanced gear at extremely high cost. Polish politicians have talked about spending at least 4%, maybe even 5% of GDP on this new armaments program. And a very large amount of these weapons, of these advanced weapon systems, is going to come from South Korea. To give you just one figure, it includes 1,000 main battle tanks, right? That is an extreme number. It includes 58 fourth generation fighter jet. It includes almost 300 howitzer systems, and so on and so on and so on. Moreover, Poland and South Korea have already agreed that much of this material will be built actually in Poland under license. So that's also a technology transfer from this very modern South Korean arms industry to Poland. And Poland deliberately is planning already to use this know-how that they will then acquire in this process, and for which they will pay very, very dearly, to become an even stronger arms exporter to the rest of NATO, EU, Europe.
Let me stop you. Let me just stop you for a minute, because I have a question about what you just said, because I find what you're saying to be absolutely fascinating. What you have just described, this confluence between South Korea and Poland, which sounds like a bit of an arms buildup, is this being done at the behest of NATO and Washington, or are these just two countries that are figuring out a way to make money off of arms, which they have every right to do?
For the Koreans, it certainly is making a lot of money. I mean, it's almost, these contracts amount to almost $15 billion, I think, in the end, right? So
wow.
This is enormous. But on the other side, all of these arms will be NATO compatible. Right. And if you think about the politics involved, it's very easy to see that none of this could be happening if the United States was not in agreement on both sides, if the United States was not in agreement with South Korea delivering and with Poland taking this initiative to build this enormous land army. If you think about what this looks like from Russia's perspective, from Moscow's perspective, a land army like this, right? That's basically a battering ram aiming not only at Russia, but at Russia's most important regional ally in Eastern Europe, which is Belarus. And of course, Poland has very complicated relationships with Belarus. So I think that all the factors that you have enumerated are in play. I don't doubt that. But that there's a very specific agenda here on Moscow's part concerning specifically South Korea and inflicting costs on South Korea for this type of engagement.
So what's interesting about this conversation that we're having is we often hear our leaders here in the West and certainly in Washington, and we've heard this from the White House and most definitely from the State Department, when Putin or when Xi or other leaders like that say, we have to defend ourselves because it looks to us like these guys are doing some things that make us feel like they're getting ready to knock on our door, or worse, right? And then the State Department or Washington always says, they're lying, that's not true, they're using that as an excuse, they're making stuff up, they're crazy, et cetera, or whatever it is that their reason is. And you're saying there is, as we say in law, prima facie evidence that the West is, in fact, doing this, and that it is a direct threat to Russia and perhaps other countries as well, as you state with Belarus.
Yes, I mean, look, it's a classical dilemma, right? One state can arm itself, and it may even actually mean these armaments to self-defense. But from the side, from the perspective of another state, that state cannot tell if these arms are going to be used only for defense or for offensive purposes as well, right? Mm-hmm. And this dilemma is always in play. And the problem with the West is that we are in denial about this fact. We expect that China or Russia, for instance, simply take our words. But no normal government in history has taken the words of a potential opponent in this regard. That would simply not be normal security due diligence.
No, it would be foolhardy.
And we wouldn't, and we wouldn't either. And we wouldn't either. But we expect that our adversary or the guys on the other side simply take our word for it. That doesn't make any sense.
I could speak to you.
It's an immature position.
I could listen to you forever because you obviously think a lot and write some interesting stuff about this, and it is a fresh perspective. But I've got to ask you about Germany. As I'm hearing you say this, I've read what you've written about Germany and Israel, for example. But now I want to ask you, where does Germany stand in all of this? The other day, the Ukrainian strongman, who's unelected, by the way, just for the record, went to Germany, and apparently half of the PMs didn't even show up. They protested his speech. They didn't want him there. How much are the Germans like the Poles or not like the Poles in this situation?
I would say they want to be like the Poles, but they're not. When you look at the German Minister of Defense, a guy called Boris Pistorius, I'm sure he's incredibly jealous of what his Polish colleagues can do, right? But the German situation is that the rhetoric is sometimes a little bit like the Polish rhetoric now, very anti-Russian, very decisive, and so on and so on. But the Germans don't actually want to pay for this. They've been talking about this, but they're not making this type of financial effort. Look, the German army right now is around 200,000 soldiers. During the Cold War, West Germany alone had 500,000 in peacetime. If you added the East Germans, you had 200,000 on their side. You had 700,000 Germans constantly under arms, among other things, to go after each other in case war breaks out, right? That was the irony. The Germans right now can't even find a way to expand their army, completely unlike the Poles. So I think that from Moscow's perspective, Poland looks like a much more serious adversary right now than Germany. Not that Germany looks benevolent, but Germany probably, from the Russian perspective, doesn't look serious. Poland does actually look serious.
Wow. Tariq Cyril Amar, he's a podcaster, a journalist. You could read him at Ninth Wave on Substack. And we thank you, sir, for taking time to take us through this explanation. Please come back. I'd like to talk to you again.
I thank you. My pleasure.
That's our show. Remember, once again, that we always believe that truths don't live in boxes, so we shouldn't look for truths in boxes. And when I say boxes, I mean only what we think and what our friends think. Truths are everywhere. That's what we believe. That's our mission. I'm Rick Sanchez. Thanks so much for being with us. I'll be looking for you again right here on Direct Impact. Until next time.